Welcome to Life, Lessons, and Laughter with your host, Glenn Ambrose.
Welcome, welcome to Life, Lessons, and Laughter with yours truly. So, hello, people. Hope you're all doing well. Lots going on out there. Lots of perceived difficulties and lots of opportunity for change. So, this is... a lot of where we are, I've said this before, we need to stop looking at and being overly concerned with what's falling apart. Because what's falling apart is broken. It's not broken. It never really... It was always set up to fail. Like the system that we created as people, as human beings, was imperfect. Which of course everything is imperfect. But if you just take a step back from it and look at just the general dynamics, this is how I find out what makes sense in all situations. Just take a step back and gain some big perspective. And, what's the general rule of society? Society is set up in place, and then you have a small group of people who make the decisions for all the other people. Now, we saw that didn't work, right? So then we came up with the idea of a democracy where people vote. And like the people are in control, which was a nice idea. That was, I think, a step in the right direction. Unfortunately, our lives get easy enough where we weren't really that invested, especially in the developed countries, we're like, people stop voting, stop taking an interest, stop holding the people that were in power accountable for their actions. And then, as soon as that happens, you're done, because then it's like, the power just funnels upward. The money funnels upward, and it's driven by greed, which doesn't know limits. It just knows more. So the system that we have was always doomed to fail. You can see countries that never had, like, the people never had a right to vote, and then all of a sudden they get the right to vote, and the amount of people that show up at the voting polls is like off the charts, right? Because people are going, oh my God, I have a voice. Like, we can actually determine what happens in our country. This is amazing. This is wonderful. And then they go. And, they probably make some good changes. And over the years, time goes by and less people go, I'm working now. it's easy to go to the polls when you're not working. When your family's been starving for three generations and you have an opportunity to make political change and, nobody's working. Yeah, sure. Of course you're going to take advantage of that. Of course it's going to get exciting. That's, everything is like that. If you don't have it, you can understand how important it is and how people want it. Like a lot of people in countries that don't have schools on every corner, the kids will walk 10 miles to school, one way. And they'll do it because they want to, and they'll actually pay attention in class. Whereas, you know, in the more developed countries, the kids are made to go to school and they're just like, I don't wanna, you know? So this is the type of mentality. We have to be careful what we're immersing ourselves with. So, you know, get into the community. I think one of the big problems in the world right now is things have just gotten too big, too out of control. So as I was saying, you know, I guess I'll just finish up that thought. The paradigm is just, it's not held accountable. It's not, I mean, if we the people stayed invested in politics to the level that we, I guess, should for the system to actually work, like for us to do that, we have to, that has to feel like we have more control. Like we have to be affected by things. Most often, the government and the countries are so big that the government can literally take trillions of dollars out of taxpayers' money and we don't even know. Like we go to work, we still have, you know, lobster on our birthday. We still go out to a nice restaurant when we want. We still have a roof over. Like it doesn't affect us. That is too big. It's too big to keep track of. And this is what I'm seeing. And so, So the old paradigm is falling apart. Let's look at possibilities for a system that can stay together. Let's look at the qualities that seems to work throughout history and, quite honestly, just logically. That's what I want to do with this podcast, is just look at some dynamics, some community dynamics that seem to work, that seem to make sense. So I actually put up a post, my friend Michelle. She's written a couple books, and if you're looking for these books, just private message me. And I can hook you up. But she has this quote in, I think, her second book. It says Mexican Sonora at the bottom. It says, the quote is, bad roads bring good people, but good roads bring all sorts of people. So bad roads bring good people, but good roads bring all sorts of people. So this sparked a conversation on this private WhatsApp group that I have. And as I started expressing my perspective on it in the group, I saw it just kind of expanded into a sense of community, which sparked this podcast. So What I was looking at, you know, when I started talking about that quote, the information that was coming through is, it's kind of, you know, like I live up in the mountains in the Dominican Republic, and the road getting up here was really bad when I moved up here. It's gotten a little bit better over time, but even more so, the road that goes by, like there aren't that many roads here, right? So there's a road that goes along the coast, and then there's one that goes up towards the center of the country a little bit more, away from the coast, and it goes out towards Santiago, which is a big city here. That road, they are redoing. They're paving it, they're redoing it, and it's getting better and better. And as that road gets better, the more traffic goes on that road. The more traffic that goes on that road, the more people try to come up this road, and this road's gotten a little bit, just a little bit better. So I've seen expansion, growth, more people around in the last 3 years and when I moved up here. Has it affected things? not too much. You know, there's a little bit of stuff that you see with people kind of coming through here and just blocking off the roads for no apparent reason, which, you know, kind of disrespectful. Hey, this is a road. I would like to get home. Can you move? And then they act like it's a big pain in the butt to move their vehicles out of the way. I mean, there's a little bit of that, but you know, it's not too bad. It's just, but that, to me, that's a symptom. Like when people came up here before, it was like, okay, I know I'm going up into the campo. I know I'm getting away from civilization to some degree. There's people up there. They live up there. It's their area. Respect them. And that's the energy in which I moved up here. And that's the energy I kind of saw when people came to visit. And that's dissipated a little bit. There's a little bit less respect, a little bit less concern about the locals. The more people come, it's just like, oh, like it's their place too. And which technically it is, but yeah, there's just a little less respect. That's all, but it's not a big deal. And some of that stuff is going to happen. But to me, it's a symptom of what we're talking about here. So let's just expand this into a larger scenario. You can see this with, like I already mentioned, you can see it with the size of a country. When you have the size of a country, the people lose touch with the government, because the government can do too many things and hide too much money and steal too much power and do all this stuff without it really affecting people. Whereas, like, if you have a government, right, like in a small community, I mean, if you have a small community and the people in that community say, hey, you know, we want to have a school, we want to have let's just say a new school for the kids. And all of a sudden, you know, people start donating money or something, you know, kind of like paying taxes, right? And they start donating money or paying taxes or whatever they decide the thing is. And then all of a sudden, there need to be books kept. And somebody is going to look at those books. So the person who's holding on to the money can't steal the money, because everybody's going to know who stole it, right? That's accountability. That is what doesn't happen when things get too large. You know, and why is that accountability? Why does that accountability stay in a small community? It's because people's lives are specifically affected. Like, my kid needs a new school and he's not getting it because this person stole the money. Right? That's where the accountability comes. When it's too big, like, it, you can't keep that level of accountability. So this is the dynamic that I'm talking about. This is the community connections that we need. Now, I'm not going to say that I know the answer, like specific answers. You know, I don't know everything. Like, and if when we're designing things, we have to design them through these conversations. We have to design them through these conversations. We have to talk about them. We have to look at them from other different angles. And sometimes we're going to have to try things and they're not going to work too well. And then we have to make adjustments. You know, nobody has a crystal ball to climb into the future and create this perfect system. So I'm not going to have every aspect of this ironed out. This is just the conversation I think that we have to start. There is no accountability when things get too large. You can see it in the government. You can see it in just regular communities. Like, you know, take New York City, for example. New York City is, you know, tons of people, and there are benefits to that. You've got so much individuality. In certain aspects, you have less judgment for other people because there's so much diversity there. And those are good things. But there's people walk by each other and don't even acknowledge each other. Like New York City can be much lonelier place in a small community. Because you can have millions of people all around you and nobody talks to you, nobody cares about you, nobody acknowledges you. And you've got like, it's one thing sitting there feeling alone when you're sitting there alone. And you might go like, hey, I feel lonely. I feel alone. I feel isolated. Yeah, that's because I am. I'm alone. I'm isolated. Maybe I should do something about it. Maybe I should be amongst people, right? And you can, that's one way to get yourself out of it. Whereas when you're in New York City or, you know, a very populated place anywhere in the world, and there's people all around you and nobody's acknowledging you, you're walking around, you're going out in public and you're still feeling lonely, that screws with your mind a little bit more. Because I'm lonely. Well, I'm around all these people. I don't understand why. It's because there's no connection. There's no community connection. So I think, you know, you can see it in the government. You can see it in the cities. You can see it in business, you know, that the like of customer service can be a pet peeve like lots of people. And, you know, and I try to look at things in healthy ways because otherwise I get irritated. So when something's bothering me consistently, I try to look at it in another way. And I look at the customer service and just the functioning of big business. And it's impersonal. And the customer service is, I think, getting worse and worse. It was bad when I was young. And then, I don't know, man, I don't know if people complained or what, but it got better for quite a while, I think. And then now it's just like, I mean, it's just getting really bad. And I think it has something to do with the size of the businesses, because I mean, really, let's be realistic. You know, of course I want customer service. Of course I do. You know, we all want good customer service, but I mean, how do you run, like take a step back from what I want and look at a giant business. How do they run? Well, they have to run by rules. You know, they have to set rules in place because you have to have that structure. Otherwise, you can't control hundreds of thousands of people or more doing all these jobs at all these locations and like treat them as individuals. You can't. It's literally impossible. You wouldn't make any money. And that's the point of businesses. So when these businesses get so big, you know, it's the same thing in school. You know, people complain about the schools, or at least they used to. Like, oh, we used to have 15 kids in a class. Now we have 30, 45, 50 kids in a class. There's no way we can give them individualized attention. Right. I understand that. You know, and it's the same thing with businesses. If you have hundreds of thousands of people working for you, you cannot give them individualized attention, because you would have to have like a very skilled leader for every, you know, I don't know, 20 people. We'll make up a number for every 20 people. And then like, how do you control all those leaders that are in control of all those groups of 20 people? You can't. Like, you see, the more people you have, the more like the more structure you need, because you can't be individual. You can't, because when you're individual, you make individual decisions based on individual people and individual situations. And if you have that, you have, you know, let's say you have 10,000 leaders, okay, that are watching over all these people. Well, 100 of those leaders are really laid back and let things slide. 150 of them are really strict, and then all the gray area in between. So the myriad of ways that your business would run is endless. Like you have no control over it. You can't do it, right? So you have to bring in structure. And when you bring in structure, you remove the individuality. When you remove the individuality, you remove the humanity. So now it becomes just a machine. And I think, you know, one of the best ways we see this now in 2023 is the healthcare industry. I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on in the health industry, but oh my God, like it is. It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know of anything more foolish than the health industry in the United States right now. It's completely off the charts. It doesn't function. And this is, and one of the reasons that it doesn't function, I believe, because like I said, you know, when my son was extremely ill for 6 weeks, you know, as a parent, you get worried, you know, so I fly over to Florida and I start looking in and I'm looking at things. They literally wanted to take I can't think of the word, like a biopsy, I believe, out of his neck. They they wanted to take a biopsy, take a chunk out of his neck and test it to find out what it was, okay? And this was after they tested him positive for mumps. Why would you need a biopsy to find out what's going on with his neck if the blood test came back positive for mumps? You know it's mumps. That's what it is. You don't need to take a biopsy to find out that it's mumps when you already know it's mumps. You know, and I talked to these people. Not once did I ever hear mumps. They told me everything that was wrong with him, supposedly, the results of the test, and they never mentioned mumps. They didn't even know it. This is what I mean. Like, there's so many rules there. See, this is the combination problem. It's the rules and the size. There's such a thing that is too much structure. Okay, so, and what happens in scenarios like this is they keep bringing in structure and removing individuality, removing thinking abilities, removing decision-making. And what happens is, you know, this is the only thing I can figure out that's going on with the healthcare system. Because I mean, what I just said about the moms is one thing out of, at least eight, maybe more, that are ridiculously off the charts about that one situation with my son. They didn't know what was going on. One person didn't know what the next person did. And then even that person would come and say something and you'd be like, well, wait a minute. You said the opposite 10 minutes ago. And they'd be like, oh, wait. Oh, let me check. And then they disappear and never come back, you know? And then somebody else would come in and say something else completely different. It's just that this, and you think with the structure, what the structure does is like it sections off little things. So there's less problems. That's true with a certain amount of structure, but you can get too much structure to where there is no thinking. Like people literally are not allowed to use their brain in any way, shape, or form. Otherwise, they get in trouble because if they use their brain, they veer off of whatever the structure says to do. Because sometimes that structure doesn't make sense. So, of course, they're not going to do it. And then they get in trouble. So they're taught not to think. And when you have a human being that doesn't think, they do things that don't make sense. You know? So this is a problem with the too much structure because of the size being too big, attempting to control things too much. There's no individuality. So this is what I'm talking about. You see it, you see it in government, you see it in the healthcare industry, you see it in business, you see it in community, government, cities, yeah, all that stuff. So I think it's important to keep the connection in community. I think what we need is smaller sections, you know, like I grew up in Massachusetts in a small town. My son grew up in Rhode Island in a small town. I also lived in Florida with gigantic cities and gigantic schools. And it's a completely different experience. And I think that the smaller towns were, I like them better. I'll just say I like them better. I was going to say they are better, whatever. That's my perspective. I like them better because there's more sense of community. Now, even those towns, there's less connection. Like when I was young, basically everybody knew everybody, pretty similar to when my son grew up. But like when my son grew up, it was more important to keep your nose out of other people's business than when I was young. So like when I grew up, like if I got in trouble with somebody else's parent, my first thought was, oh crap, I hope they don't tell my parents. Because that's usually what happens. So I could get in trouble with the neighbor's parents. And like I had to listen to them. Don't come in my yard. Okay. Sorry. Whatever. Oh no, kind of feeling. And then like, oh crap. Oh, I hope they don't tell my parents, you know, but they did usually. So, and then they tell my parents and I'm in trouble there too. So it's like, you know, and then my parents might make me go apologize, right? So that's accountability. Of course, I didn't like it as a kid, but that's accountability. And there was less of that when my son grew up. You know, there was more of a sense of community. Like you didn't tell adults to go screw themselves as a general rule, you know, because it was going to get back to your parents, you know? So it's like, that's that connection, that sense of community, that accountability that comes with it. You know, like people nowadays can kind of live their life however they want, like dysfunctionally. They can walk around being a complete jerk to people all the time and there's no consequences. There's no consequence to their actions. This is why it's like, I believe in accountability and consequences. And you know, sometimes I get in trouble because I grew up, you know, that small town was somewhat violent. It was a long time ago. So, you know, sometimes it's like you kind of go back to your roots and simplify. And it's like, you know, you watched what you said to people and who you were saying it to. Because if you didn't, you were going to get punched in the head. Now, I'm not saying that we should go back to that. But what I'm saying is that the level that people thinking before they spoke and having a certain level of respect for other people, that was kind of embedded in the community because it was small enough that everybody knew what everybody else was doing. So there were consequences because people found out and people held you accountable. So you didn't do certain things. So this is, I think, what we have to get back to. Because, and, you know, I want to clarify this a little bit. It's not, you know, again, it's not about punching in the head. I'm not saying we need to do that. It's, but that is an example, a dysfunctional, so be it, but it's a dysfunctional example, but it's an example of accountability. So let's look at the accountability piece in more of a clear way and less dysfunctional way. So there's this term called Ubuntu. And, you know, it was derived, I shared this post a few times. It was derived, I believe, from this tribe in Africa, that what happens is when one of the tribe members does something negative, you know, maybe they steal something from somebody or whatever, they do something that's deemed negative in the tribe, what they do is the whole tribe stops for, like, I think it's up to like 3 days, and they put the person in the middle of the community, and they all form a circle around them, and for like 3 days they tell them everything good about themselves, everything good about that person that made the mistake, because they believe that if somebody does something that is negative, then they must be out of alignment with who they truly are, with the goodness that they are. So they tell them all the good things about them to remind them how wonderful they are and how good they are. And not only is that beautiful, but I also believe it to be true. You know, a lot of times people, like, if I'm, sometimes you gotta talk about the future, like a utopia, you know, just to make sense of where we're going. We're not really that close to a utopia yet, but that's the direction that we're going. And whenever you talk about a utopia, what people always say is that they're like, oh, that's never going to work. There's always going to be bad people. It's like, why? What? Why does there, like, people aren't bad. People aren't inherently bad. I don't believe that. They're not, you know, there are lots of reasons why people are bad or do bad things. But I don't believe inherently they're bad. So if we're living in a utopian world where everybody has love, you know, like, and you can, hopefully you can kind of see how people would get this more in small communities than in large communities where nobody knows anybody. Oh crap. I just lost it. Wow. That just skipped right out. Oh, well, who knows? Maybe it'll come back. But because I was just going down this road, man, and it left me. But, you know, what can you do? So let's start talking about something on topic. Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Out of alignment. Yeah, I believe that people are, like, in, when they're in alignment, they don't do things, negative things, because why would they? You know, it's when people have enough food, they have shelter, clothing, they have other people that love them around, they feel a part of, like, why? You know, why are you going to go steal something or hurt somebody? Like, what benefit do you get out of it? You know, nowadays, people, there are reasons. You know, that's one thing I noticed over here in the DR. As a general rule, there's less anger over here. Like, people are happy, right? So how I see that kind of play out in negative behavior is, in the United States, it seems that people break laws, take to violent behavior, damage property, even the way that, like, even if they're stealing money, the way they steal money is just angry. You have, and I don't, and I should, and I'm taking it from you, and I deserve it, and all this stuff, and it's anger filled. Whereas over here, it seems that even the people, like, let's say they, you know, they can't feed their family, so they go steal some food, well, or money, whatever. They'll just go steal it to get it because they need it. It's not this anger. They're just like, it's kind of more matter of fact. It's like, well, yeah, you know, I don't have anything and I need it, which is completely different than you have and I don't. Screw you. Like, the anger and the violence comes out in the United States, whereas over here, it's just kind of more matter of fact, you know? And I think that has something to do with the size of the community over here and their lifestyle. They're more laid back over here, you know? of course, you know, stealing is still stealing. So it's a little bit off topic, but my point is that it's, I believe people do things when they're out of alignment with their true nature. If you're living in a happy community, and you know, this is completely feasible. We have enough money, enough food, enough technology to give everybody shelter. Like, we have enough abundance on this planet to have where everybody can live a decent life happily. We have that. We just, people at the top hoard and people at the bottom suffer. You know, it's distribution. It's not lack. You know, so you know, if we're living in a utopian world where everybody had what they needed and people loved one another and connected to one another, why? You know, if somebody was like, "Hey, you know, I'm like it." Let's just say you live in a house of you live in a house with 10 other people, right? And all of a sudden, one of the people came and said, "Listen, I just got laid off from work and I don't have enough money to eat. You know, can you guys help me out?" Most likely those 10 people or the other 9 are going to come together and help out, right? Because one's struggling. Now, picture that when you have a community of a million people. Where do you go? Where do you go where somebody's going to listen to you? To the mayor or something? Like, it's not going to happen, man. You know, I mean, I understand that there are governmental programs, and that's a whole nother freaking podcast, you know, the dynamics of those and what aspects of them are good and what aspects of them hold people back and blah, 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 which I'm not going to get into. But I mean, this is what I mean. Like, when there's so many people, there's just no, like, there's no individuality. There's no, oh, really? We look at the mental health crisis. I mean, who do you go to? You're alone. You know, we're so focused on individualization and being individual, and there's no community anymore. So I think that, you know, we need to get back to community. We have to understand what works. Like, I was watching this documentary. Which one was it? It might've been The 12. If you haven't checked that out, check it out. It's The 12. It had all these indigenous leaders go over to the New York City, which actually, it's funny. I was going to say something else about this, but they came over to New York City and there was all these ancient wisdom teachers from all, like from the bush out in the middle of nowhere, all around the world. And they come to New York City to have this creation aspect of the new paradigm, basically. And long story, but anyway, so they come and two of them were like from the bushes of Africa maybe, and they're walking down the street with all these people, and they start talking to each other and they go, "These people don't say hi to one another. They walk right past each other and they don't say hi. I wonder what happened to them. I wonder what happened to them where they don't say hi to each other." You know, they couldn't even understand how you can be around people and not acknowledge them. Like, when they saw that, their first inclination is, "I wonder what happened to them." Think about that. I wonder what happened to them to make them like this. Like, from their perspective, there is something wrong with these people. There is something that is hurt on the inside, or some sort of difficulty that they went through to close off their heart, to get them to a place where they can walk down the street, passing each other, touching shoulders, and not even acknowledging one another. Like, something negative must have happened to get them into this place. I wonder what it was. I mean, to me, that's so interesting. You know, it's very telling, you know, and I think it was that show, and they were talking about talking to an indigenous leader, you know, in his little community. And they said, you know, what is happiness to you? It might have been a different documentary. I'm not sure. But anyway, they were asking this guy and they said, well, you know, you seem very happy. And he said, happy. He says, yes, very happy. He says, well, why? And he was, he was like, well, because I'm part of a community. That's why. That's where I derive my happiness from. I'm part of, like, we love one another. I'm part of a group of people that loves one another and we care for one another. That's why I'm happy, you know? And it's like, wow, man, I can see that. I can see how being a part of a community and having that connection with fellow human beings is so important. How can we expect to live in harmony if we don't even care about one another, if we're not connected, we're not vested in one another's interests? Like I don't know that we can. And I don't know how we can expect ourselves to be connected with one another when the communities are so large and the businesses are so large. I don't see how we get there. I don't see a way to take, like, let's, you know, I grew up in the United States. So, you know, that's why I use that for an example most of the time, but you can use anything. How do you go into the United States and say, okay, there's 50 states. We have to get that smaller. Okay, well, let's go by the city. Okay. Well, some of the cities are too big. So let's go down to the boroughs. And how do you break that apart and rearrange how the entire country functions? You know, how do you deal with, like, right now we still need a military? How do you have a country that big and magically make the people accountable in it? I don't know. Like, I don't know that we can. It's, you know, maybe we can. Maybe there's a way. But what we're doing isn't working. You know, it's like the cities are even too big. Like, I mean, especially in Florida, of course, but I mean, even in Massachusetts, like, stuff goes on in little states and little towns that it's already, even in those small microcosms, they're too big to control what's going on, to have people be accountable to one another, you know? So whatever, you know, this is going to play out over time. So I don't know the specific answer, but what I do need to know is that we have to start connecting to one another more, and we have to start holding our leaders more accountable. You know, we have to start thinking of the connection of community as something valuable. We're unconsciously just moving towards more individualization and separation from people. You know, even all the cars, like, you know, like in the United States, most families I know have two cars. Why? Because, well, they can't have one. You know, why? Like, you know, we drive to soccer games and I'm a very independent person, you know, so I can be as guilty as everybody else when it comes to this, but I want to look towards things that are better for my future and for the future of the world. So this is why I contemplate this stuff and try to lean in a direction. I'm more of a part of community over here in the Dominican Republic than I ever was back there. I mean, growing up, there was a sense of community. Maybe I didn't really appreciate it in that small town. But at least since then, I'm closest to community over here. So, but like, you know, you go to a soccer game with, you know, I don't know, 20 kids or something, you know, and 19 cars pull up. Probably more than that. You go to a soccer game with 20 kids on the team, just, you know, I'm just talking about one team, not both teams, but like there would be maybe 30 cars for 20 kids. Why? Well, because you have one car for each kid that brings them. And then, you know, other parents meet you there or have to show up late because they have something to do or whatever. So you end up with like 30 cars for 20 kids. Nobody carpools. I mean, you know, we did a couple times here and there, but as a general rule, no. Like I have my life. I have things to do. I'm very busy. I need my own car and I need to get there on my terms. You know, and you lose that sense of community. You lose that talking to one another, that back and forth, that what's going on in your life. Oh, really? I look at it from this perspective. See, like sometimes, you know, life coaching has exploded in the last 20 years, right? However, there's still a lot of judgment about it. And there's still a lot of people out there that could use life coaching that don't get life coaching. And one of the main reasons is because people think that they're supposed to figure out things on their own. And we're simply not. You know, I use this example all the time. Take a person, put them on a deserted island for 3 years where they don't talk to anybody and they get stuck in their own head. Weird stuff starts to make sense and they're freaking crazy. Right? So this is what's happening a lot in our community. Like you don't have to leave the house. You can order food. You can work from home. Like there's no interaction with other human beings and you get trapped in your head. And weird stuff starts to make sense when you get trapped in your head. I can't count how many times like I myself and other people talking to me, you know, thought they had something all figured out. And then they say it out loud and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe, for some reason that made sense in my head. I don't know why saying it out loud, it doesn't even make sense. That's part. And then the other part is just different perspectives. Weird stuff makes sense inside of us. Stuff that doesn't make sense makes sense when we're stuck in our heads and we're not getting any feedback. We're not saying it out loud. We're not talking it over with people. This is why I still talk things over with people. And also it's the different perspectives. We're individuals for a reason. Not so that we are each an island. That's not why we're individuals. It's so we have different perspectives, so we can be more together than we are separate. It's balance like everything else. You know, of course you want to be individualized. Of course you want to be an individual. Of course you want to be unique. We were designed that way. But we're also supposed to come together in community and become more together than we could possibly be separate. But, you know, it's more of a good thing is not always a good thing. This is what, you know, it's like we were individuals and we had a tribe of 10 and we couldn't accomplish everything. Then we see this tribe of 100 and we're like, oh my God, look at all the stuff that they accomplished. We should be 100. Okay. But at some point, maybe we should have stopped because now we have communities of, you know, I don't even know, hundreds of millions or something. And like, that's too much of a good thing. We went too far in the other direction, which is something we usually do. So it's about that balance. You know, yes, we can have community and we can be more together than we are separate. But that doesn't mean we have to keep going in that direction until, you know, we're so out of balance that we get all the detrimental aspects of it. You know, I mean, I was an alcoholic for 20 years. That's, you know, that's a problem with addiction. It's like a little is good, more is better, right? So I drank and like, oh, I don't feel insecure and I feel confident and my problems don't bother me and blah, blah, blah. So I drank a little and that's what happened. So if I drink more, then I'll even be more confident and I can do more. No, that's not how it works. It's balance. It's in the middle, right? So I think, you know, maybe we can live in you know, maybe this is part of the answer. Maybe we can live in large communities, but have small groups. Maybe we just have to connect to the people around us better. Maybe that's just it. You know, maybe we have to have smaller sections and stuff and that are love based. And then, you know, like all of a sudden you have like, let's say we start seeing community groups or something. I'm just going to try to like phrase this in a way that we can wrap our brains around it. So like, who knows, maybe we start forming community groups where it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, we support one another and all that stuff and out of love. And then all of a sudden it's like more of these groups pop up and more of these groups pop up. And maybe we even have a number limit on it. I don't know. But like these groups stay small enough to where they don't blow up into where we can't keep track of each other anymore. You know, maybe that's an aspect of it. The other thing that just popped in before I finish is, you know, the an interesting dynamic in AA, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is only, those groups are only so big. And I'm not saying that there's no dysfunction in AA. There is. But one of the things that's interesting about AA and the model of Alcoholics Anonymous in the 12-step program has been studied immensely over the last, what, 80 years or something. So they have the least possible structure, like at the top. They're, like, you can't become powerful or make a bunch of money in AA. Like you can't do that. Like that's, and they specifically created the organization like that. There is no power to be had. There's no head of AA. There is no person voting on a pay raise for themselves. Like it has the least possible organization with nobody more powerful than anybody else. Like, and that lens, you know, maybe that's part of our future as well, you know, because that if there's no possibility of becoming more powerful or making more money, if you do things, then you're not going to do those things. You know, you know, it's politics. It's the whole game. It's like, you know, why do the people at the top do the things that they do? Well, it's because they can make more money and be more powerful if they do these things. So they do, and they're not held accountable. So, you know, so if they don't have the ability to become powerful or to make money, that could be a piece, you know? So, you know, this is the beginning of the conversation. So, you know, talk to people, talk to me, you know, what are your thoughts? You know, what's the solution? I mean, I think that there is an aspect of connection to one another and a sense of community that is necessary moving forward. But how do we get that? You know, I see all kinds of benefits with it. Self-esteem rising. When people are struggling, there's people all around them going, hey, we struggle too. Oh, really? There's nothing wrong with me? People I work with actually think that there's something wrong with them because they're struggling. That's sad in this day and age of information. Like there's nothing wrong with you because you're struggling. You're trying to swim upstream in a dysfunctional system. The fact that that, you know, you're struggling is probably a good sign because the system's dysfunctional. You're not. But there are ways to interact with it that are healthy, and we can help one another, you know, through community, through connection. So how do we get that? You know, let's start this conversation. How do we form communities on a grassroots level? We don't need anybody's permission. How can we form communities where we're closer to one another and we care about one another and we hold one another accountable? You know, so thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah, I'd love to hear your input on this, but that's going to do it for now. So thank you. Go be part of community. Peace.